point nine, if you look at that longer period, we ought to take that into account to see.
Well, this point nine that you're talking about will come to, but that is what yield should be, at least it's what we've modeled it to be, in a 100-year event. And so anything worse than that, that number could certainly go down. And that, I think, is what you're, what you're talking about.
If you throw them the last 1 year, we're good. But if it's the second year, we aren't going to get that.
So, well, the modeling that we do takes this drought scenario, and it just moves all the way through time over the period of record, 1951 through 2015, is what we're currently using. And so you can see what happens. You can look at the results and see what happens from year to year on either side of that. So that at least illustrates, you know, what we might be dealing with, but it's just defined differently. So I don't know if you're...
Yes. So this is looking backward at what the history has been.
Yes, it is.
My question is, and I won't say any more than just a question, is there any way that people can use, can predict what the precipitation will be in the future because of such issues as climate change?
No, absolutely not.
We don't know what will happen. We did take a look at that as part of the engineering work that went into this, looked at some fairly sophisticated models that have looked at that, and there's just no consensus on where this will go. Anything can happen. You might have less snow and more rain. It might get drier. It might stay the same. It might even get wetter in places. So the answer is no, we can't really tell.
Are we?
Okay, go ahead. Larry, refresh my memory, how often is the raw water master plan redone? Revisited?
The first, well, we did a plan in 1986, although it wasn't called that. It was called the drought study, and that was done by a different consultant. And the first version was in 2005. The second version was in 2012. Now we're at 2019. And the original idea was 5 years, more or less.
Okay.
It's ended up sometimes the interval has been defined by events such as a decree that's pending, that kind of thing.
So was this city council direction? It's ultimately, if the council does the council adopt the raw water master plan?
Yes,
they
do.
Yes, okay.
It's an official.
So it'll be embedded in that if council adopts it.
Right.
How do I phrase it? Can we take certain pieces of it, say, in 2 years from now and say, we want to revisit that particular city council direction and not revise the whole master plan, but just look at an element of it?
There's no reason we couldn't do that, no, if we needed to. But for it to be approved, it would need to go back through city council if it's something we were going to make as an official change.
Next.
Okay, are we all in agreement? Do you want to continue to use the 100 drought plan?
And I think one thing we ought to point out, there's been a change in terminology in the water industry over the last couple decades of conservation and efficiency. Efficiency is what we want everybody to do all the time. Use water wisely, use it efficiently. And then, if things get rocky, we start seeing a drought event, that's when we go to conservation, and those are actions and policies above and beyond norm. That's curtailment of outdoor use and so on and so forth. And that water efficiency plan is being developed. In fact, I'll talk about that in a little bit. So.
Thanks for pointing that out, because that's a real distinction that's evolving.
It is, and I think it's very important, and a lot of times those two terms are used interchangeably, and they really shouldn't be.
Yeah, wise use is long-term habits. Conservation is response to an emergency.
Right.
At least that's how I think of it now.
Gary, I think I'd be in favor of continuing to support this number one. But we'd like the LUC to sort of bring it back, not hold this process up, but revisit it. I mean, I think Larry raised the, what does curtailment mean? That would be a great discussion to have. Climate variability is obviously plays a role in that. What it's also talked about, are we looking at a single year, multiple years? I think it'd be a great conversation to have. And we may not have all the answers, and it may take a long time to sort of flesh all that out, but it might be helpful for the LUC to put some meat on the bones of what we think this direction means, and if it needs modification back to council, we could make that recommendation.
We can certainly work on something like that. We do have a drought response plan.
That's our next major document that has to be revised, and I'll talk about that too.
So that might get pretty close to what you're talking about right there.
Yep.
Randy, you agree with this?
No, I still think we ought to look at this maybe a bigger period, but these guys have done quite a bit of work. Sponks done a lot of work, but they're comfortable with just a single year. Then that's fine to me.
I think we're good with it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Second thing is just the analysis itself. You've seen the analysis. You've had presentations from Sprunk Water engineers. That analysis forms the basis of the raw water master plan that we've provided to you and that we're looking at right now. We just need to confirm that is the document that we want to use. And when this goes to City Council, the recommendation will be either to use it or not to use it. If it's not to be used, we've got to start over somewhere and do something differently. But we feel like we need to confirm that council feels that is a tool that we'll use for these purposes, for evaluation, to use for consideration of acquisition of water in the future, and our overall plan for water resources.
I'm in favor. Anybody else that is not?
I think that's a pretty perfunctory answer.
Yeah. We're good.
Yeah, please don't change it now.
Yeah, that would be bad. I think they've done a really fine job.
Okay. We are recommending, based on what we've seen in here, that we retain the same demand target that we've had now for a number of years, and that is 30,000 acre feet of water for the city. We're not saying that this target may not change at some point in the future, but if you look at the actual water use over here and then the projected demands out here, the darker blue color is 1.5%, I think, yeah. And the lighter blue crosshatch up here is a 2% increase in demand over time. And these are based upon population increases. We've also built in a diminished use of water over the next 10 years, which is in line with what we've been experiencing over the last 20 years, about 0.5% a year. And that has to do with low use fixtures, that type of thing. We know at some point that will kind of level off, but that's led to the lowering of our gallons per capita day numbers. So we extended it 10 years and then just went directly with the population at these growth rates out here. And this is 2060 right out here. Here's the supply line that we have. And you can see we're well within the supply at the 1.5% growth rate.
And another consideration, as we're finishing up the revised, and we will bring this back before you when we're done, the revised water efficiency plan. One of the things we're talking about in there, one of the things the state is mandating us to do, is to work more closely with planning to talk about land use and land use requirements. So one of the things that could severely impact that upward slope is, say, 10 years from now, if through the planning process in the city council, they said, okay, no more green lawns. Everybody's going to go to look like Santa Fe. If you've ever been to Santa Fe, the only thing that's in front yards down there is rock, sand, and cactus. Now, I don't know whether that's going to happen, but I'm saying that as we work through this with the planning process, that could severely depress that line because the gallons per capita per day would then be decreased even further because you would be negating a lot of outside watering. So there are a number of factors that could adjust that line. I doubt if it's going to go up. I would say, as continued water, efficient water use, if anything, it's that lower line with the concept with the efficiency tapped into it.
And these projections here, this 1.5% is is basically information that comes from our long-range planning, and they work with the state demographer's office, too, on things. Up until the last 15 years, we have their actual projections. Their projections end at 2045, so what we did was took an average of the last 15 years in their series and just applied that same number to get out to 2060.
Larry, how much of that diminishment could potentially be coming from densification, higher density developments that have less space around them that
sure.
would be irrigated and so forth? Is there going to be just an inherent diminishment from an increased densification?
Yes and no. I'll give you both sides of that answer. As you know, we just went to City Council to diminish or decrease our raw water requirements for residential development. And the reason is exactly relates to what you just said. Smaller lots, lower use inside, and we're finding that less water is needed. So yes, that has the impact that you're describing. If the densification means redevelopment of previously developed areas and increasing the population density on a piece of land with vertical growth, then no, that does not necessarily mean that we'll be decreasing. In fact, we can be increasing the overall demand in those situations. And we've analyzed some of those.
That's one factor we really want to take a closer look at with planning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where did the 40 years come up with? Why is that another one from City Council? Why aren't we looking at 100 or 50 or 75? Where's the 40 years?
Stephanie, I think the best answer I can give you for that is it's just a number that's reasonable based upon the planning life for projects and that type of thing. Because even at this point, we don't know. It's getting pretty shaky out here, and to take that on out. Probably, I don't think would mean a whole lot to us. But what this does tell us, I believe, is, you know, we're right here in time. We need to be looking at this in these increments we just talked about, because this needs to be pushed on out in time and be sure that we're ahead of that process by at least the length of time of a project. And projects are 25, 30 years long.
That leads in, and we can talk, it's probably going to come up later, but that comes into storage.
Yes.
You're never going to get storage in 40 years, so you're going to, and I don't want this study and our suggesting that we're only going to look at a 40-year time span limit a decision to go to storage. So that's mm-hmm. just kind of my...
Right. I mean, it takes years. The Chimney Hollow project, with all of the effort that's been put into it, has been going on since, I think, 2002. Mm-hmm. And we're not there yet, and it still has to be constructed. So by the time that's done, that'll be at least a 25 to 30-year project, probably.
Exactly.
Green Ridge Glade, I worked on personally for 19 years, and it was already underway. So, you know, that was 20, 25 years. I'm not exactly sure when it really kicked off, but somewhere around 1981, and it was built in 2004 when it was finally completed. And as far as what might happen in the future, we've done studies ourselves. You might recall working with Base Point Design, looking at potential reservoir sites from Rocky Mountain National Park out to I-25 about 10 or 12 years ago. There aren't very many, and they're very expensive. I don't know how long a future project will take, but I'd say they'll take at least as long, and very likely longer.
Well, I think that graph.
This is the number we're comparing to right here. The modeling that Spronk did in the yield analysis shows that once we get the Windy Gap firming project in place, once Chimney Hollow is built and online, and once we finish the infrastructure that we need at the reservoir site downstream, Great Western Reservoir, the old Kaufman Pit, or Great Western Pit number 3 it was known as, they're showing a firm yield of 30,740 acre-feet. But as you read the documents, you'll notice in here that there are things that can affect this quite a bit, such as other people using exchanges on the river, or fewer units of CBT being delivered down the river, which affects our ability to exchange. So given the conditions, we've assumed this looks good, but things can change. And that's another reason you've got to look at this just every few years and see what's happening and what might need to be changed. So we feel like this 30,000 acre feet is probably still a reasonable number. Our own projections of water use out to 2060 are a little bit lower than that. We did it a couple of different ways. One of them showed 27,000 acre feet. One of them showed 25,000 acre feet. But there's a lot of loose ends out there. So we feel that 30,000 is reasonable. So that's our recommendation to you, for you to discuss and let us know what you think.
Is there any discussion? Randy?
Seems to me like right now that is a reasonable target.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm.
Larry, I think these graphs say a ton, and as I've said as an LUC member, I've been wanting to understand what are we targeting, where are we headed, and mm-hmm. what is our role, and to Stephanie's point, is it a 40-year horizon, is it a 100-year horizon? God help us. But you know, the CBT acquisition and the water acquisition fund has come up from time to time on the LUC, and what this shows me is, you know, what we're financially investing in is Windy Gap firming and the Great Western site, and that if those get pulled off financially and yield wise, that'll take us to about 2030 in terms of supply, or rather,
that takes us to this line.
Right.
This is assuming
in terms of yield
in that period of time, and this is a very conservative assumption, but we assume nothing else happens in this period of time. I don't think that will be the reality, but it takes us out that far.
And that's where I was going, is and maybe Stephanie was alluding to this earlier. It, you know, I've said before, based on the numbers that I'm looking at, CBT may not be around in 2030. And if we're going all in cash-wise with Windy Gap and Great Western, which I don't disagree with, I think we need to start sort of thinking about CBT is just not on the table for us. If we're locked up cash-wise for the next 10 years or so, so we ought to be looking at what are we going to start doing between the 2030 period and the whatever.
Mm-hmm,
and revisiting this is going to help us with that trajectory. How far do we have to go? Well, maybe it's 2065. Maybe it's this.
Yes.
Maybe efficiency conservation takes root or whatever that is.
One of the things
That's exactly where our conversations are. I mean, Windy Gap is going to get built. Okay, it will. I don't know when, but it will. In our planning, Great Western Reservoir is going to get built. So we're now looking at that. What do we do next? What do we do next to firm up our native? What do we do next? And I think you're right. I'm not counting on CBT. I think we're going to have to firm up what we got. So
one of the things that I have pointed out elsewhere in here, but this is a good place to bring it up, is native water that we have really needs to be stored.
Right.
And if we store it in these vessels, the ones we have or these, the yield isn't as high as the credit that we're giving for them. And we're not sure how much more that will acquire, but there are still shares in several of the companies out there that potentially the city could receive. And if we do, how do we want to make the best use of those? There was a rough analysis we did that said maybe about 1,700 acre feet that could come to the city. And if you look at the firming ratios and things that apply, we need over 4,000 acre feet of storage somewhere in addition to this. So, you know, maybe that's the next bump out here, is some other storage, another smaller Green Ridge Glade or something like that. But
you know. So I wonder if for the LUC, if we could come out of this with another ask, which would be, can especially those of the LUC members like me that wasn't around for the storage study, if maybe the storage study could be presented in an abridged version of this is what we did look at, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, if there's staff opinions about, yeah, we looked at that and please don't ever look at that again.
That's
just happened.
Pretty much where we looked at six, I think it was 67 sites in a tabletop exercise, we reduced that down to 8 options, which encompassed 7 sites. One of them had 2 options on it. And those were field evaluated, obviously very early feasibility level studies. But we came up with, honestly, only one of those that looked feasible. And it was expensive, but, you know, in today's world, those prices don't look quite as bad as they did at the time.
Right. We can bring back a truncated version of that.
Mm-hmm.
We got that.
Okay.
Okay, Larry. Yeah, we got that.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Number 4. Several things in here.
Yeah, I think our census on that was that you'd like it, so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. Go. We approved that.
Okay. Feel like getting to have you, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dad. Okay. Yeah, don't let me get ahead of you. So policy for accepting raw water, there's really a number of things to think about here. And this is where there's a couple of things we want to pull out. As Joe pointed out earlier, we need to give some more thought too. But we do have some things that we think make sense and could proceed as recommendations out of this fourth bullet point, or fourth recommendation. One is, should there be a minimum amount of every payment made using something besides ditch water? In other words, something stored effectively, CBT water, or cash in lieu if we're building storage, or the existing cash credits in the water bank, which are assumed to be stored water. They were set up that way. And we currently do this. We have what we call the 50% rule. And that says that for each transaction, half of the water has to be from one of these 3 sources here. The other half can be ditch water. So these are the 4 things that we accept: CBT, cash in lieu, cash credits, which are in the water bank, and native ditch water, native credits. So those are the 4 we have that we use. So here's maybe a clarification on the 50% rule. We don't want to create a hardship for people. If there's a transaction that's, you know, less than an acre foot, maybe it shouldn't apply. Or less than, in the past, at one point, I think we had less than 4 acre feet, maybe it shouldn't apply. But I think this, it makes sense that we have some de minimis clause in there for that, just for practicality. And another very important recommendation coming from staff and coming from this analysis is that the CBT credit that the city has been giving, which is a full acre foot, 1.0 acre foot per unit, is probably too high. And many entities use 0.7. Our engineering, at least, indicated that we need to go down to at least 0.9 to be sure we're actually getting the water that we're giving the credit for. Yes, Dan?
Larry, how many years or decades back were we at 0.7 or 0.7?
I think that changed, if I remember right, in 2005.
Yeah, I remember those years.
Mm-hmm. And before that, we were, well, if you look at the city's history, it's been several different levels. But before that, we were at 0.72. It was kind of an odd number for a while. And then I think 0.75 at one point, 0.7. I even saw 0.6 at one time, looking way back. But we went from the 0.7 or 0.72 something level to 1 in 2005. What this does, though, is affects your cash in lieu if CBT water is the basis for the cash in lieu fee.
0.9 just feels better. You know,
yeah.
It just sounds better.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there were 2 pages on this one, so let me look ahead. At the same time, we're looking at the credits for the native water, and those numbers have been updated. We had 2 ditches that actually went up and 4 that went down slightly. 2 of these, the Barnes ditch and the Chubbuck ditch, the city may no longer accept, but we still have credits in the water bank that are, that came from this source, and we still need yield numbers for them. And so those have been devised here.
Larry, sir, let me interrupt a second, if I could. You said may no longer accept, will no longer, or?
Contractually may not accept any longer.
Okay.
That was an agreement with the GLIC at the time of our 2010 decree.
Okay, thank you.
So, as you can see, if you look at the current credit here in yellow, these are what we're doing. If people bring us a share of Buckingham, a share of Big Thompson Ditch and Manufacturing, Southside or Loudoun, these are the numbers that we would recognize as credits as long as they will pay the storage fee at the time the credit is used. If they don't want to pay the storage fee, this would be a firm yield. This is what we calculate we would actually gain from those shares, and obviously very much smaller numbers. To date, I can't think of any transaction that involved these numbers, but they're there if anyone wanted to use them. The big change we're talking about here is from here to here. Barnes, very slightly down from 3.32 to 3.31. Big Thompson Ditch and Manufacturing actually up a little bit, 3 acre foot per share. Buckingham's down about half a share. Chubbuck down 0.04. Loudoun down almost 0.3 acre feet per share. And Southside's up a little bit, about 0.4 acre feet per share. So those are the updated numbers based on, you know, the increased period of record that we have. And we're recommending that we approve these new numbers over here, including these numbers here for the firm yield. These are actually a little different too from the numbers we had. We didn't put in the old numbers, but they're not much different from these. But this is our recommendation, is what's in this table here. And to acknowledge that the city will only accept native water rights that, in its opinion, it will be successful in using and taking through the water core.
Larry, what am I missing? The column, second column and the third column, the second one's average yield and the third column's firm yield?
This column right here is, it's based on average yield over a long period of time, and we can recognize that, or actually gain this yield by acquiring those shares if we build storage for them. And that's the basis also
that
for
the
storage.
That would be the firm yield.
That would be the firm yield if we had storage. This is the firm yield if we do not build any additional storage.
So using Barnes as an example, which is a bad example since we're not taking anymore, but if we were to get a new inch, we're giving a 3.32 acre foot credit, and if we didn't build storage, we're only able to use 0.66 firm.
Right. It's just saying that at some point in the future, back to that graph we were just looking at, we need some more storage.
So I think what Sean's saying is maybe that middle column ought to say yield is stored rather than average yield. Isn't that your question?
Well, we could make that perhaps a little plainer. Average yield if stored or something.
Now that I understand it, yeah, it might help to be clear, but it's also very significant that, given our previous conversation of what are we doing for the next 40 or so years, that storage is imperative. Otherwise, we're going to get caught with our hands in the cookie jar.
Now, honestly, if you look at all this stuff taken together, the whole story is storage. We've got to have more storage if we want to actually increase that yield.
Guys, I didn't know what they were doing 100 years ago.
So we have these two pages on the fourth point. We also had in here the cash in lieu and the storage fee, and those are the things we want to come back to you. So we've taken those out, wanted you to know that. We want to come back for some further discussion in the future. But if you'd like to give us your thoughts on what's on here, we'd certainly appreciate that.
Larry, one more thing. So being optimist and saying we're going to build storage, mm-hmm. It looks like all but one. looks like several were giving higher credit than we actually see in firm yield. Am I right in seeing that? So Big Thompson, no, that's not it.
Any of them that we're giving this for this new credit for without some way of storing it in the future, we're giving more credit than we'll realize in yield.
Right.
We will realize this without storage.
But even with storage, it's not significant. But Chubbuck, for example, we're given 2.94 and we would realize 2.9.
No.
This is the current, this is current versus proposed.
This is 2012, now we're 2019. There's just slight differences in the numbers.
Oh,
Sprock just tweaked the numbers and
Sorry.
The modeling.
So that will be the new credit.
This would be the new credit which will replace this.
Right over here. Okay, sorry.
I apparently didn't make that clear.
No,
sorry.
I wasn't paying attention. Thank you.
Okay, we all good with accepting the raw water policy?
Yeah.
Back to the previous slide.
I'm good with it.
Okay. I think I have a comment on it. It seems like as long as we're still using the 50% requirement, we're going to satisfy the second point there. Either we're going to get cash or we're going to get CMP.
Right. Probably cash. Well, actually, what we're seeing is people using right here these cash credits. There were a lot of cash credits that were bought in the water bank back at the time of Green Ridge laid, and I'm not sure how many acre feet of credit in there, but it's a substantial amount. There are over 4,000 acre feet of credit in the water bank, and the cash credits are a fairly significant part of that. But that's been by far the most active thing, people using those cash credits.
So you're always going to get, number one, some minimum amount, unless you change that 50-50 rule.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we're not proposing to do that at this time.
I'm good with that.
What's the cash credit compared to cash in lieu?
The cash credit is defined as acre feet. People came in 1999, 2000, bought credit at that cash in lieu price, and it was then defined as acre feet of water.
Okay, but it was that time period cash in lieu.
Right.
So good investment if you compare it to what cash in lieu is today.
Sure.
Okay, I think we accept the.
Okay, good with number four then?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. All right, here we just want to talk about the storage, which we've already been talking about a little bit, but we have upstream and downstream to look at for storage, and they really serve different purposes. Upstream, you're looking at firming on an annual basis. You get a ditch share. It provides water for 4 or 5 months. You need to meet a demand for 12 months. You need to store something somewhere to get through the entire year. You also need to store in the wet years so you have more for the dry years. So upstream storage is obviously very, very critical. And what we're saying here, one way to do that, obviously, is complete Chimney Hollow Reservoir. Green Ridge Glade was actually built to allow being raised about 3 feet at the spillway. And that's something we need to look at, the feasibility. But if we did that, we could pick up maybe 450 or so acre feet of water, or of storage, I mean. Firm yield would probably be about 150 acre feet. But that's something that we'd like to look at in the future. Another option that may give us a little more flexibility is after Chimney Hollow is built and filled and in use, Loveland may choose to go back on its own through the NEPA process and seek permission to store our native water in Chimney Hollow Reservoir. And you use the conveyance of the CBT system to do that. So it's just something that could be done. I'm just pointing out the possibilities here for the future.
Would we be a unique member in that project that would be able to do that and utilize it that way?
Well, for us, especially if we figure out how to get it to our water treatment plant or put another water treatment plant at a location where we could feed it from there, yes. It would be very very...
The other members wouldn't really have that opportunity.
Not unless we could get together with a regional water plant or something like that. I'd love to see something like that happen.
Well, I have a question on that. Would it make sense to start a change of diversion for those now before you even get to that?
We already have that.
Up to where you take it through Chimney Hall?
Our decrees allow diversions at Lake Estes and then downstream at Dilley Tunnel. Dilley Tunnel's a little downstream on the canal system, but I think you could probably get water by exchange over that half mile into this reservoir. But I don't think we'll need new diversion sites. What we would need, though, would be to go through NEPA and then renegotiate or negotiate a new contract or renegotiate the one we have that would allow us to store in that reservoir. Okay. We have that contract now. We started, it's a 25-year contract, expires in 2026, so it won't be too long. We'll be looking at renegotiating that anyway. So if Chimney Hollow happened to be there and going, it might be something we could do at that time. But
I didn't remember you could divert at Estes already.
So. Right.
Olympus, yeah.
The original decree in 202A did not include that site. It only went up to Dilley Tunnel, and so that was added as a separate application to the court later.
And I remember when Dilley Tunnel got added to that, the Bureau got excited because no one had spoken with them.
Somebody forgot to talk to Northern and the Bureau.
I remember sitting in that meeting.
I'm glad it wasn't me. Yes.
Sorry, I apologize for being a little late.
No, we're glad you're here.
Maybe you addressed it. Have all the legal challenges at Chimney Hollow been resolved?
No. Just a brief update on Chimney Hollow. There are events on both sides of the Continental Divide. I'll start with the West Slope. We have reached a contract with the family. It's the Schmuck family who owns... No, that's their name. That is their name.
It's Schmuck Children's Trust.
Oh, my God.
They own the property right below the diversion dam on the Windy Gap. And we're looking at having to modify the way the water comes through the reservoir there, and that property is needed. We've negotiated a purchase of that property. They were the last people who were opposing a water court application on the West Slope, Division 5, and that was needed to change the use of some of the water that we're diverting in the Windy Gap project to allow it to go to the people on the West Slope. So
I think that's on board now.
Yes.
Okay.
But that still has to be completed
sure.
in the water court. The thing that's probably the larger issue is still pending here on this side, and that is the civil case, which looks at our application and purports that the review on our application was not done properly by the federal agencies. So it's really environmental opposition to the application, and that's been a slow process. We're not sure how that will turn out. What we do know seems to be encouraging, but it's a very, very slow process. Honestly, you should be talking about this.
Is this the Denver law students that are practicing on this?
Yes. Yeah, we're providing them with a gold-plated education.
Yeah. So. Well, I hope they flunk their course.
And then the last thing on the upstream side is consider other upstream options. And this relates directly to what we were just talking about. You know, for native shares, we need storage somewhere. And so we need to be thinking about this. We've got our hands full right now. We've got major projects upstream and downstream. But we need to be thinking on ahead. As you're pointing out, Stephanie, there's going to come a time somewhere about 40 years out there that we're going to need another reservoir, probably upstream somewhere. Downstream, we have the site that we're now calling Great Western Reservoir, and that needs a fair amount of infrastructure, pumps and pipes that will allow water to be diverted out of the river and placed into the reservoir, and then also to be pumped out of the reservoir and placed back into the river. The elevation of the reservoir and the river relative to each other will allow some gravity flows, but not entirely either direction. So we'll be needing to do that. That's a project we're looking at probably 10 years out, something like that. But we do have the site now. So, but obviously we need to work, move ahead with that. Our recommendations are pretty simple. Complete the Chimney Hollow Reservoir project, complete the work at Great Western Reservoir, and then look at any other storage opportunities. And as we're able and as opportunities arise, we need to consider whether we take any additional steps there.
I think we all see the benefits of storage, so is there any opposition?
That's what we're going to be working on.
Okay, good.
Okay. Number six. This is an interesting one. In some ways, it's a bit of an academic exercise that we've already been through, but I want you to know about it. You can look at different ways of handling our raw water. We have old river decrees. We use those first. In our modeling, we say those are used no matter what. We have decrees then that have come along over time. We have CBT water that was acquired, actually became usable in the late 1950s. We have the Windy Gap water, which became usable in 1986. Each of those has their own set of benefits, constraints, expenses, all of those things. And we've basically looked at them in an order that seems to make sense to us. But what if we change the order around? And that's what this is. These are some things that we evaluated. The city has some domestic decrees that if fully activated, as we think they should be, could add some more firm yield. Using CBT, you know, right after Green Ridge Glade, or CBT and Green Ridge Glade half and half in the winter. We typically don't use much CBT in the winter, just the reservoir. It's just different ways of using the water, and the firm yield numbers that come out of that are shown in this column. Here's what we call the baseline. That's the 30,740 acre foot number we were looking at a few slides ago. If we could get these domestic rights fully utilized, they're adding, here's the increments here, they're adding some water. You actually go down in some of these scenarios. Mainly, we're just trying to look at what makes sense. What should we be doing? Are we doing something wrong? It's kind of a gut check, in a sense, that we want to go through. And honestly, our recommendation is, obviously, we plan to be working on these domestic rights. And other than that, probably stick with what we're doing, because from an economic point of view, it makes the most sense.
Maybe semantics, but I would wonder if, instead of using the word maximize, it would be optimize.
Okay.
Probably be. We'll fix that.
Mm-hmm. No, because that's really what it is.
That's really what it is, yeah.
And optimizing doesn't necessarily mean the highest number of acre feet.
Right.
It's
Larry?
Perhaps it's been done in the past this way, but I found myself feeling like, geez, let's allow the expert staff to optimize or maximize, and it feels a little restrictive to kind of put it in this and have council adopt. But is it desirable to sort of have the direction to optimize and maximize? Or
we've done this before, but mainly we're just looking for verification that we're approaching this correctly. It wouldn't have to be in there. This is what we would be doing.
I think it's more of a procedural aspect rather than an absolute firm recommendation. Mm-hmm. It's acknowledging it. What it basically says is acknowledging it lets Larry and his staff do what we do all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in favor of that.
Okay. Thank you.
They would like to stay employed, so we're good.
Any other thoughts? Are we okay with this one? Head nod, whatever?
I think we're okay.
I'm all right with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go do it.
And this is actually the last recommendation, number seven. And evaluate the most effective ways to make use of our reusable supplies. Reusable water is generated when we use Windy Gap water. It's generated when we use water under our 202A decree that's been stored, and it's generated whenever we use water from our newer decree, 392. That's really the reason we needed storage downstream, to help us stage that water and make use of it. And there are different ways of using it. I don't think this bullet made it into your packet. I just added it right before the meeting because it's the most obvious use of that water. Your decrees require a certain amount of return flow, and you've got to use that water that way. So obviously you do what the decree requires. But then you look at, how could we use this water when we've used those sources of water and we can account for the amount of it that's reusable? If we capture it downstream, what do we do with it? Well, a nice thing to do with it is to exchange it back up the river and use it ourselves. That probably gives us the greatest amount of benefit when we can do that. However, our river is small enough to be physically limiting. So you've got to be careful when and look for times when exchange is possible. If you're exercising a change would dry up a reach of the river, you can't do that exchange. And so it's kind of an opportunistic thing. You've got to look at the river almost every day and take advantage working with the state on doing these exchanges. You can also look at downstream users. Is there another municipality or some entity downstream that could use some of this water? And would they be willing to do some sort of a trade? Would they pay for that water? Would they trade it for some other water? We could do something. Maybe somebody has some CVT water that could take this, and if it was advantageous for them to do this, it might be advantageous for us also. Those are the kinds of things that we have to be on the lookout for. And we've talked in the past about a purple pipe system. Back when Centerra was just developing, we looked at capturing water this way and pumping it up into Centerra. It just really wasn't quite feasible at that time, so the infrastructure was not installed. But are there other areas that are developing? Highway 402 corridor, maybe we could do some raw water or purple pipe system or something out that direction.
So Centerra is still developing. Is it possible to, with their newer developments, to incorporate that?
It becomes somewhat problematic for the infrastructures. Here's the basic. If all of a sudden somebody decided to put in a brand new golf course right next to the wastewater treatment plant, and I wouldn't have to worry about tanks, pumps, or miles and miles of purple pipe, boy, that'd be sweet. That'd be really good. But every time you start involving, you know, getting it somewhere, pumping it, storing it so that you can pump it, the dollars just usually don't work out. That's the problem. The other thing is, if I had $1 million to put into brand new purple pipe for recycled water, or $1 million to rehab leaking potable water pipe, I think I know where I'm going to put my $1 million. I'm going to go take care of my existing potable infrastructure. So it's tough. We had a very extensive system in California, and there were some areas that we tried to get to of parks and schools and things, and it just was a dog. You just could not make it work out, even if there was a big concentration of irrigation needed.
Now, and you don't want to get in a long discussion, I'm sure, but when I attended a water conference there, down in Texas area, for instance, there are a lot of large companies, universities, and so forth, that are recycling their water just within their, is that a feasible?
That would be up to the independent, okay. That would be up to their economics. Yeah, we don't have
any. We wouldn't provide any kind of incentive on it. No.
Well, those are the thoughts that we want to keep, you know, before ourselves, keep up with, and keep you aware of. You may have others, I don't know, but again, this is kind of a recommendation that comes out of the work that we've done, and certainly appreciate your thoughts or approval, whatever you wish to do with it.
Do they need to take a vote on this item now?
On what, I'm sorry?
Yes.
Okay. So,
is there anybody having a problem with this? I think that this is something that we all should make sure that we just see number two there.
Yeah. Yeah. This particular item, number seven.
Yeah.
Problem.
Yeah.
So then I move to direct staff to incorporate the preferred policies and direction as we discussed here today for inclusion into the 2019 Raw Water Master Plan for presentation to City Council.
Is there a second?
What's going to happen with the other items that we didn't touch on today? How will those be dealt with?
We'll bring those back when we have those. You know, I'd like to say it'll be next month, I hope, but if it isn't, it'll be subsequently there. And then those would need to be incorporated with these and go together to the City Council.
But not until everything in toto is done.
Are we okay if we don't indicate in this motion that those items are outside of this motion?
Well, I think when you said as discussed at this meeting, that was implied.
Yep, but I'm good with that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got a motion, a second, and more discussion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
I have another motion. I think we should nominate this as a potential Pulitzer Prize for writing. It was very well done. It was very clear, and I thought it was master.
I'd like to give credit where it was due there, and I think she's gone, but Michelle,
yep, once again,
who also worked on the other one, was very instrumental in that.
As were both, you know, Nathan and Ryan, and obviously Larry. As you can tell, it's an incredible amount of work, both from a technical standpoint and then simply from a verbiage publishing standpoint. It is a fine, fine document.
It's excellent.
I should have mentioned when we went through on slide 4, but Randy, I know, shared with all of us some thoughts, and I've had discussions with different ones of you on different things, which have led to corrections of errors and that type of thing. But Randy's thoughts, I think, will certainly lend themselves to the discussion that we'll have on the items that we withheld as that comes up. So some very good thoughts there. Thanks, Randy, for sharing those.
I had input from Larry.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Nice job.
Okay, let's go to the commission and council reports. Steve, before we start with you, I'm going to tell everybody that Courtney is going to be leaving us, and we appreciate everything she's done for us. I'm going to miss you.
Thank you.
I've got a card for you here.
Oh, thank you.
Signed from all of us. Did you get a chance to sign?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's very kind.
And we appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Nice. Thank you, guys.
And I didn't eat a third cookie, so you can help yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Steve, you
want to
start off?
Well, probably the most significant thing is that we're in the budget process, and so council has an opportunity to get two study sessions on that, and so we've had the first, we've got the second coming up here, and next week, and so that's, I think, a pretty significant deal, because particularly in the area of water and power, there's some significant increases, particular area of broadband. That's a biggie. The rest of the things that are coming up probably don't have a lot of significance for this body. So, one of them, such as liquor licenses and so on.
And an election? Yeah.
Well, yeah, the election for some coming up. It is going to be an interesting election period. We have people that are coming out of the woodworks. It would be a very challenging time if some of those folks are elected.
Steve, did you say something about liquor license?
Yeah.
I'm all for those.
I'm all for them. Yeah. It's actually a city liquor license, too. It's the Rialto. They want to get their own license right now. It's 222 is providing the support, and they want to take it on themselves. They think they can provide better service.
Make a little more revenue.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's a good thought. Anyway.
Yeah.
Again, thank you all for your participation in this body. It's one of my favorite meetings. Sorry I was late, but I was visiting the grand opening of Thorpe Cabinets, and I don't know if you all are familiar with them. And
and we worked hard to keep them in the city. And if you have an opportunity to take the tour up there, it is amazing, which we're supposed to. So I highly recommend it.
How many employees do they have?
I don't know. They got a bunch.
They do.
Yeah, and but it's, they used to be in 7 buildings that were kind of interconnected to make 3 buildings, which still was pretty inefficient. Now it's, I mean, it's an assembly line, and they just produce these cabinets, and they're beautiful.
Just remind me where their new site is.
The old Cubicor building. It's on, what is it? 57th. I think that's right.
57th.
Yeah.
So they did relocate?
Yeah. Yeah. They're in that. It's a huge building. In fact, they aren't utilizing it all yet. They're leasing out part of it. But it's a very efficient operation. And amazing cabinets. I mean, you push on them, the door opens. My wife is not allowed to go in there.
I can just say that in my travels up and down I-25 between here and Denver, I regularly see Tharp vehicles, trucks going
good,
up and
yeah.
down the highway down to Metro Denver.
That's good. They do business in Wyoming, Nebraska, right now in addition to Colorado. So. The young couple that's taken over are very bright, and they've invested a lot in it. It's going to be a player.
Good. Okay, Sean, let's start with you.
I don't have anything.
Okay, Randy?
I just want you to all know the sacrifice I made to be here today. This is my usual day to go drinking at 4 o'clock.
No wonder you haven't just had the liquor, right?
2 hours behind.
So did you move that to yesterday?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That's all I got.
I'm wondering about not so much cash in lieu for our water, but for CBT water prices themselves. Given the historic numbers we're starting to see come out of CBT water, are we going to be proposing a raise in the CBT water prices?
Well, you mean in terms of cash in lieu?
Not in terms of cash in lieu, just well.
CBT prices are determined by the market. We have absolutely nothing to do with that.
I guess I am asking for cash in lieu then.
Right.
We're shooting ourselves in the foot.
That's the topic we heard. Yeah. We're still working through that. The storage aspects, CBT, the fact that we've been capped. There's a lot of factors there that we want to work through, come up with a sound, defensible a recommendation for cash in lieu, and then bring the analysis plus the recommendation back to you folks.
So
sorry on that. If memory serves, the LUC thought we'd want to revisit the market price more regularly. Is that on hold as well, that piece of it?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm saying we hope to have that next month.
Okay.
Yeah. We're trying.
That's fine.
Okay. Dan?
Yes, I'd like to give a shout out to Mike Scholl.
Yep.
I saw the news that Mike is moving into the private sector after his 11 plus or minus years
yeah.
with the city. He's economic development role, and I remember working with Mike right at the beginning, interacting with Mike right from the beginning, and he's really accomplished some great things and is leaving some big footsteps or footprints or whatever you want to say as far as his legacy here in Loveland.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Is that in the paper?
Yes.
Is that okay? Yeah,
yeah, I think it was today or yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, the Foundry project. Yeah.
Yep.
Project, so that was a big one right there.
Yeah,
changed downtown, for sure.
Well, he and Kelly were both instrumental in keeping Tharp in the city. Yeah. They've done a lot of great stuff. We got TriPoint
up on Boise.
Boise. That's $1 million a year to sales tax revenue that we were not getting. Even though they had part of their operation on there. Now we get the whole thing. So that
was
really
a good one. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Jim, what's your quote about Mike? I'll open it up. You told me the other day when we were down at King Supers.
Oh, he was referring to that King Supers
as a money printing factory.
Yeah.
One of the biggest.
A lot of it's mine.
Yeah, he just said it's one of the biggest success stories as far as a new establishment in Loveland retail.
That's all I have.
I don't have anything, thanks.
Okay.
Couple of quick things. You will get the official invite within the next couple, 3 days coming out for the, not from you, you don't have to worry about it. Regarding the dedication ceremony for the wastewater treatment plant. We'll have you folks there. We'll invite LCAP, city council, the executive leadership team, the constructor, and the two engineers that worked on it. It'll be a few minutes of speeches, and then there'll be some tours so that you can take a look at the new facilities there. And that's scheduled for the 22nd of next month at 10 in the morning. And so you'll be getting an official invite to that very shortly. I just wanted to let you know, I don't know if y'all know it, that the folks that, the staff in operations, both water and power operations, that have commercial driver's licenses, also participate in the snow removal operations here. They spell the folks over in Public Works. Obviously, that's the main driver over there. But our folks, our staff, participate in that, and they've gone through 2 days of training the last couple of days. So when it snows this winter, sometimes it'll be a Public Works employee in that cab, but sometimes it'll be one of our water or power operations staff. Just wanted you all to know that. Speaking of the wastewater plant, the walls are going up very nicely on the new water quality laboratory. You won't be able to go up to it because it's still an active construction area, but you'll be able to see it. But they're doing great. They expect to have that thing buttoned up and enclosed before the weather comes in, and so they'll be working inside all winter, which is good. Right now, probably a May time frame for completion of that, and our laboratory people are just anxiously awaiting that. It's going to give them a lot more room, a lot more capabilities, in a much safer and nicer environment that they're working in now. And then the plans are to renovate the laboratory areas that were at the water plant and the wastewater plant, and that'll give the operations folks even better accommodations. So that's good. And we'll be bringing back, I was looking at the schedule today, I think after the first of the year, we'll be bringing back the water efficiency plan to you, again, courtesy of somebody named Michelle, who's been working mightily on that. So that'll be pretty interesting. So finally, I would like to also add my thanks to Courtney for all the help that she's, and she gives all of us a lot of help that you guys don't see during the course of the week with other things, contracts and so on and so forth. But what she's doing is a good thing for her, and for that we're really happy, but we're really sad to be losing her. So thank you again, Courtney, for all your help.
Thanks. Yeah. Can I bring up two more things? You're really going to schedule this water, the tour of the plant on the night of the council meeting?
Yes, sir. We did a very one of our customer relations staff did a very thorough scientific investigation of that date, and she found out that on that date, at that time, the temperature on average for the last 3 years was 55 degrees, there was no precipitation, and there was a 1 mile an hour wind out of the northeast. I'm serious. I am dead serious.
Farmer's Almanac.
No, that was historical. Dead serious. She did that analysis. So we picked that as the optimal time.
All right.
Why is that wind from the north?
Are you y'all familiar with the sales tax and utility rebate program? Y'all have gotten involved in that at all?
No.
If you're not aware, the city does provide a rebate to some of the folks that are lower income for sales tax to kind of give them a rebate and give them a little help. But they also do that for the utilities so that to prevent people from having their utilities shut off. I need to get a little presentation on it. It's
coming out of his paycheck.
You didn't know that. So it kind of goes through the community partnership office.
Right, Allison.
And the House and Neighborhood Services administers it,
and so they evaluate the people and so forth.
I did know about that, yeah. With the House Neighborly Services.
Yeah. Yes, so
I did.
It's a really neat program, just wanting to make aware of it, because it does provide a huge benefit to some of the people that are lower income, and you know, a lot of retired and so forth. So thank you, even though you didn't know you were part of that.
One more.
Okay.
On the wastewater treatment plant thing.
There will be no food.
Or could we invite the Arts Commission, since they got 1% of that construction?
I will take that under advisement.
I think it would be a great opportunity for them to.
They should buy the beer.
They should be.
Have they chosen a piece of art for that location or anything?
No.
All right. Anything else? We're adjourned.